Ken, let's start here. Tell me about the journey and arriving at Calgary Next. Where did it begin? How do you end up with what you have now presented to the city and Calgarians?
Really good question. It's inevitable in all facilities of any kind that you're going to have to look at ultimately replacing them. Question is when, and a whole series of questions. Can you afford it? Should you do it? When should you do it? When we began talking about this, the question was, well, what's wrong with Saddledome? Didn't we just build it? We built it in 1983. You'll remember, Rob, in our discussions years ago, it was as though when we talked about a new building, it was as though, okay, you're going to open it tomorrow. This project will take 3 years to build. And it will take another 2 years. I said yesterday at a gallop, this would be 5 years. Let's say for each significant problem you have, it might add 6 months, might add a year. So 5 years is now six, or six is now seven. I'm not predicting that, not foretelling that. So the preliminary work leading up to this is, does McMahon Stadium and does the Scotiabank Saddledome, is it prudent and is it appropriate for us to look at it? And of course it was. You can't ever plan too early. And then we went through a myriad of choices, discussions, options. Where could it be? Those early questions that said, well, is it at the site of the Big Four? Well, once it was. It wasn't actually there. What it was a contemplation and a consideration. We worked for a year with the convention center people. To look at whether or not combining an event center and a convention center was important. Now, we don't have a convention center. We have one, but we don't have the kind of Class A convention center the city like this should have. And it was actually they that determined, well, you know what, maybe we should separate these visions and these ideas, which we were fine with. But so you go down a lot of different paths and then emerge with what we think is the best and most logical and most rational and most practical and most financeable. And this is the one we came up with. And the beauty of it is you go through enough straw man exercises, straw person, I guess, to be politically correct. And you go through enough exercises that you have to be able to do what I did yesterday, stand up there in the face of whatever prevailing wind, mayor says there's no money. Oh gosh, this creosote problem is so challenging and so difficult. We'll never be able to fix it. You have to stand up there and be with conviction and tell people why you think we can face these obstacles and hope or assume that they'll come to the same conclusion. And I think largely they have to a certain degree and will ultimately.
Is it fair to categorize that there was always, or not always, but the thought on the arena, that probably came first, and that the stadium and now Fieldhouse was something that came on midstream in your planning process? Is that a fair?
Actually, the stadium being older, there was talk, 10 years ago, before we took a majority ownership and operation of the football club, there was a consideration for massive renovations. There was consideration for lots of things, but it was sort of independent. So it was floating. It's been a couple of years since we've taken over management and operating of the football club. So it migrated nicely into the thoughts about the event center. But before we were the majority operators and owners of the football club, yes, the answer to your question is yes, it began as an event center. The field house was interesting because as we looked at the stadium and looked at 10 football games, and notwithstanding what I said yesterday, Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, Ottawa, Hamilton, coming up with a good, solid rationale and some really neat stadiums, we wondered if there wasn't a more effective and a more efficient way to get one. And the Fieldhouse Society and the recreation priority for the city just kind of started to fit. So what happens is you don't wake up with an aha moment. you work down multiple parallel paths and things start to fall in place, or sometimes they start to fall out of place. But in this case, they start to knit together and they start to make some sense in a broader and more integrated.
To me, the real, not centerpiece, but the interesting component in this is the field house. Because I'm not sure, and you can answer this, but I'm not sure you started off with the vision of a field house. There's a need for that. It also seems to me that it feeds very well into kind of the project itself, which is, you know, the entire West Village development, that this really kind of met a need in terms of giving to the community in that way, too.
You're absolutely right. It did. It was intriguing. Once through our research and through our process, we came across that. And you say, gee, that could really, really be a fit here. And we need it anyway. So it's certainly not going to be controversial. And, I said the decades long struggle to get it. If we can give that a push, and we really hope we can, but it is a good solution. Like having an integrated facility that if, as I demonstrated in my presentation, if you do these all separately, it's another $300-400 million, and it's several hundred thousand square feet and more parking and separate infrastructure. It just fit like a glove, fit nicely into our conceptual thinking.
Yeah, but you know, and I'm going to be extravagant about this and exaggerate this, but there are other facilities that, you know, pro sports teams are home to that they would say, oh, no, that you can't come on our grass. No, this is for pro athletes only. You do have to kind of get past that. Not you, but do get past that, right?
Yeah, but in a perfect world, amateur sports, I mean, we have recreation hockey play here. It's not a really efficient use of a 20,000 seat facility, but I think our attitude is, and our foundation, as I spoke of yesterday, several million dollars a year that we put back into the community. We're not saying that in a boastful sense, but it's all about being a part of the fabric in all senses. The community rink, which is a mini field house, I guess, in a sense, we'll practice on that for 3 hours a day, and for the balance of the 24 hours, maybe not use 24 hours a day, but if somebody could use it for the balance of all those hours, we'd be happy to have them use it, is kind of an example. It's good to integrate amateur sports and recreation with professional sports. It's a nice fit.
Which, again, speaks to the whole vision of Calgary Next, and I'll get to that in a second. I want to have just a little bit of fun with you, if I can, in this conversation. Through the whole process, my guess is you would have seen a lot of things. At any time, was this a shopping mall? At any time, was this one building that was going to be hockey and football? I mean, there's probably been some pretty wild things thrown at your direction.
I got some pictures that would curl your hair, not mine, because I don't have any, but in terms of outrageous vision of things that you might do. Gosh, we had things in places wedged into parts of the city that they say, you think you're just going to build this building and put it on a helicopter and drop it down in there? Because I don't know how else you're going to get it there. And over top of things, and underneath things, and beside things. So, yeah, it was fun to have a blank page and think about, you can have anything you want, world. Here's what we would do.
Can I, from a personal standpoint, I sat in the theater and I watched you make the presentation on Calgary Next, and I guess, I don't know if it was hoping or thinking that through this whole process that this would have been more about, was going to be more about the practicalities. We're going to have this restaurant here, and we're going to have these video screens here, and this is what the football dressing room is going to look like. But it's really more about, this is the vision. This is where we want to go. Let's deal with this as a city right now. Is this what we want? Is that a fair assessment?
That's right on the money, Rob. The fun part, as I referred to it, which is the pretty pictures and the architectural renderings and that type of thing. There's a vast amount of work has been done and continuing to be undertaken. I I teased a little bit about an innovative, never before in the world design, which people will see. But this discussion is to have people understand that the big vision, it will be cool for people to say, well, hold on, I think you should have more of this or less of this and that type of thing. But that's the kind of conversation you have once you have solidified your location, once you have solidified the financial package, once you've dealt with the myriad of issues. It doesn't make much sense to get people excited. I suppose it might be some sort of a marketing scheme, but to get people excited about, hey, this is what it's going to be, so you better get behind it so we can solve these other problems. I think serious minded people look at let's share this vision first, and then we'll get to the pretty parts later.
But and begs a question then, is the financial component to this, wouldn't that be tied to that? And by that I mean, you know, you've laid out a plan for how to fund this and the cost of it.
Yeah, we know what it's going to cost.
Okay, so that won't change.
Yeah. No. I hope not.
I mean,
it better not.
No, but you know what I'm saying.
I talked to a contractor. We have a group, obviously, and we were talking about costs, and I said, well, this is going to be an interesting one. This isn't going to be one of those ones that starts at a dollar and ends at three. He said, well, sometimes that happens. I said, the reason it can't happen is because we don't have $3. We only have a dollar.
One of the points you made yesterday was going to the Board of Governors meetings with the National Hockey League and seeing presentations on other arenas. There are
other, not more than arenas, other actual civic concepts.
Right. Where, and you also know that there are other people out there, and I don't want to be that guy that says, well, you know, there's people who say, a guy like Andrew Zimbalist, who's a very well-known professor, sports, he seems to be the guy that all of us call when there's a new building, and he comes out and he says, well, this, you know, it doesn't impact the city. Can you just talk a little bit about that? Because there are going to be those who say, oh, you know, these types of developments don't help the city. But there is part of this that also is kind of playing into the city's vision of where it's going to, right?
Yeah, well, talk to Tom Wilson, who presented at that Board of Governors meeting the Detroit vision, and it's unbelievable. Talk to the folks in Edmonton, go to Edmonton, have a look, and look at their new national bird, which is the construction crane, which are all over that downtown, and people are very, very excited, and tell them that this isn't important and isn't valuable to their cities. Tell the people in Los Angeles that LA Live didn't work, because it did. So with all deference to Mr. Zimbalist, whom I do not know, for him to take presumably an American view of what does or doesn't work in a Canadian city, I think might be a bit presumptuous. But you know what, maybe he knows something we don't. We know this. We wouldn't agree with his view.
The point being, though, that sometimes, you know, you do have the building. You look at Columbus, for instance. You know, Columbus has this incredible build, I guess, would be behind the arena district now, yet there's components downtown that, you know, kind of died away. This isn't about redistributing the wealth of Calgary, is it?
No, because we're not taking it away. I talked about bookending East Village. East Village is primarily, I mean, it's got the beautiful National Music Center, and a lot of residential, some commercial, but a lot of residential, and the National Music Center is sort of the key piece. Our piece is a connection, a bookend, and really completes. It's kind of connection and completion of our downtown. So you don't say, oh, well, this area used to be good, so now that'll be in a shambles and we'll forget about it. Let it become urban blight and the new place will be the cool place to hang out. That's not what we've got here.
So what do you do now, Ken? You brought forward Calgary Next. Here is the vision. There's a website, calgarynext.com. People can go there and they can see it. Do you go to the public? Do you do public meetings? How do you deal? And obviously you have to deal with the financing, and that's something that we come to determine. What happens now?
Really, really good question, Rob. So we have several fronts. Let's pick one. Let's pick the CRL. The city has to get a CRL authorization from the province. You could wait till the clouds part and the sun shines, and or you can go ahead and start working on that file, and somebody can tell you in the provincial government, yes, no, or maybe. Then we'll lobby and we'll work that file, and it will be contingent. Say, okay, under these conditions, you can have a CRL. So that's a parallel or one path. Let's look at the environmental remediation, which is being worked on as we speak. We have consultants, CMLC, Calgary Municipal Land Corporation has consultants. So that file will progress. And it's a piece. So in any integrated project with so many moving parts, there'll be a traffic study. Last night's session had a lot of people talking about parking and we have a lot of research and work to do. Now, we've done a lot. It's not as though we forgot about parking. That's not it at all. But what is the best solution? So, and we have some of the answers to some of these questions. We have all of the answers to some of the questions and none of the answers to others, and that's what we work on. So what you have is a vast amount of activity on a number of different directions where it's always been my business practice to work on parallel paths. If this doesn't work to facilitate the cleanup, then what else will work? Don't confuse that with Plan B, which I was really clear on. There isn't a Plan B because Plan B ultimately then becomes a competing vision, and we're not trying to figure out which one we can get. We know exactly what we would like to do, and to the extent that the public and you asked about public engagement, that process has begun. People like you are going to get tired of hearing me sometimes saying the same things over and over and over again, but. This isn't marketing. I suppose it's kind of marketing, but I've always preached that good marketing is boring to the marketer. It's not boring to the people that haven't been exposed to it yet. We have 500 stamp season ticket holders at noon today.
You said something about the parking that begs the question is, how rigid is the vision? If you go to the people and the people give you feedback, and I want to be really careful about, let's say the people want everything painted green for whatever reason. I mean, I don't know. Is there flexibility built into the system that if you do take it, parking, for instance, maybe the dome, you know, football being played inside as opposed to outside, if there's a hue and cry, and I'm not suggesting there is, but is there flexibility built into you?
Well, you, to a certain degree, but you really have to have some pretty strong parameters or else you're going to get whipsawed into a situation. You saw the show of hands survey I did on covered stadium. We knew that, but it was in an interesting microcosm, a little piece of research. Half a dozen people preferred to have an open-air stadium, nice August night. Beautiful place to be, and the vast majority, I didn't count them, but 95%, 98%, 99% were very, very pleased with the notion of a covered stadium. So if there became a lobby for an open-air stadium, it would be no different than a lobby for something else. We're going to have a roof. Ironically, we have to have a roof for the field house anyway. So you're open, but you're going to have strong parameters.
I guess the big pieces for everybody is always going to be financing. But I think the other part that's become a very pivotal piece of this vision is the creosote and cleaning up that area and that environment. You used the term the gift back, and that one kind of stuck with me, and I was turning that one over my head. Having been a public servant, and this is not to demean the levels of government, but I know how this works. There is kind of, no, that's your area. No, that's your area. When you say the gift, you're talking about being the catalyst. You're talking about bringing everybody in, and let's deal with this because there needs to be something pushed for.
So the gift, I'm certainly not the gift. We're not the gift. The gift is ultimately a clean site. It has languished for a long time, and I pretty much outlined why it has. The city is indemnified by the province until and if they move the dirt. The city's never moving the dirt as long as that situation exists. So we can come in and we can hopefully help the city and the province and maybe the federal government work together to say, hey, this really should be cleaned up, regardless for what reason. Nobody will argue that point. And how will the liability issues be ironed out, and how will the financial structure be lined out, and how much will it cost? Like, we don't actually know how much it'll cost to clean it up. You can have all the exorbitant hundreds of millions you want. A lot of our intelligence suggests it's easier and simpler and less costly than a lot of people think. And we have done some work on it. There's a coalition of, in the world. There's a lot of creosote sites in the world. People don't naturally think about that, but if you do think of it for a minute, the turn of the century and before that, when we were building the great national railways throughout the world, was the primary source of keeping railroad ties and telephone posts from rotting. And, so they were prolific. They were all over the place. And it's interesting. This coalition came out. We don't even know who they were and said, hey, this is neat. This is important and this is valuable. And they provide more credence and more reputation to the need for the cleanup and the value of the cleanup than we ever could.
So they sought you out?
No, they've commented just from an observational standpoint. They came out this morning. I didn't even know there was a coalition of world creosote people that wanted this thing to happen. So maybe we should have known that, but and we could have employed their expertise. But we're certainly going to talk to them. So the gift is dealing with this issue.
Yeah, because you build here at the Stampede Grounds. It's not an issue for you, and it just sits there and it never changes.
Yeah, right, I don't. Right? You know what? I have a strong hunch that whatever happens, I'd say it's going to get cleaned up now.
Fair enough. Let's talk about the financing. You mentioned before the CRL, the Community Revitalization Levy. This is really interesting to me because, A, this, you're not reinventing the wheel. This is already a mechanism that has been used effectively here in the East Village.
Best execution of a CRL development financial tool ever. Credit to Mike Brown, Lyle Edwards, and the city, who are the major shareholders, by the way, the councillors and the mayor and all of us, I guess, as citizens, are the major shareholders of CMLC. So they executed brilliantly, and all you got to do is go look at East Village. Go think and remember what it was and go look and see what it is. Same device used in Edmonton. And again, runaway success. And throughout North America. So it's the beauty of it is that it is something that would not otherwise exist. Now, I think I made a mistake yesterday. I think just saying $200 million in private equity, it's really $450 million. That ticket tax, that $250 million ticket tax, is private equity. Whether it's the first $8 of a ticket or the last $8, I may as well have said it's $450 million in owner equity. Now, it's coming from a ticket tax, and that's not changing. I'm not changing the story or anything else. But you saw when I told those folks, you're invested, but every dollar of every ticket is what keeps this team going. And every beer and every popcorn and every Coke and every soft drink and every hot dog and everything else is what makes this merry-go-round work. And to put it succinctly, that's going to be over half of the funding. You take the CRL, which we've just talked about, that leaves the Fieldhouse funding. Take us away, move us, do whatever you want. It's kind of like the creosote thing. Okay. Like clean up the creosote because we should, build the field house because we should. Clean it up because we're going to be there. Build the field house because it works beautifully. So much the better.
My practical question, I guess, on both of those, Ken, is, and I apologize if this is a fairly ignorant question, but where I'm assuming that money comes from somewhere to begin with. And I know there was questions asked you about the financing of the ticket tax. How does that process work?
Well, the ticket tax, generally speaking, would be financed. I think your colleagues and peers yesterday were, well, who's going to finance it? In a sense, it kind of doesn't matter. The city has borrowing capacity, and they have great rates that they have access to because they're not borrowing it from the banks. And it simply needs security, and the security is the ticket tax, and owning that stream forever. So it's kind of a moot point in a sense. What you want to do is come up with the most efficient and least costly debt structure that has to be secured regardless of wherever it is, and use it. You're borrowing money, and you're going to pay the money back. This isn't one of those fuzzy government deals where it seems like you're borrowing it, but you're never paying it back. You borrow it, and it gets paid back from whomever borrows it to whomever has to pay it back.
And the CRL, then, how does that work? Is that money that you get up front?
Yes, it is. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And now you only get that money up front when you prove the efficacy of the CRL. You can't just say somebody's going to build a hotel and somebody's going to build an office tower and somebody's going to build a condominium and a bar and a restaurant. Are they? you need to prove it out.
And that's the mechanism that the CRL or what you're going down the process. Yeah. Okay.
So remember those multiple paths and those multiple files. I'm going to spend, and we're going to spend, and smarter people than me are going to spend time trying to convince developers to come in and build an office tower and to build a hotel and to build a condominium complex, many of them, and to build a restaurant, to build a bar, in order to provide the assurance that's necessary to say, yeah, there is going to be sufficient flow of funds.
The part that I find intriguing, and I, you know, you tell me, maybe I'm misreading it, but part of your presentation was done with the deputy mayor and alderperson at the table with you.
Well, the ward counselor.
Ward counselor, sorry.
For that area. Right. That's why he was there.
Meanwhile, the mayor puts out a release corresponding at the same time. There's clearly an issue. I don't get the sense it's a blood feud, because it seems to be a very amicable communication back and forth. Can you just talk about the city's component to this and where that stands and how you get to the end?
I think, and I was really appreciative of Councillor Woolley, Evan Woolley, and Deputy Mayor Dan Collier-Cart. She's Deputy Mayor for August, and that's why she was there. And she's also there as an interested councillor and a supporter, as I think most of the actual aldermen are. Our aldermen, councillors, pardon me, old habits die.
I know, yeah, absolutely.
It's hard not to be a proponent. The question is how, because of the financial issues. So I don't sense any controversy. Actually, I think the mayor loves the project. His question is, well, how are we going to do this? And he acknowledged and I think largely applauded the approach that we're taking with it. And from a very practical standpoint said, well, we don't have any money. What we need to do is we need to help him and the councillors, find that money, because there's always money for the right projects that have the right public benefit and have the right public support.
And they would own, this is where I want to make sure I understand, they would own the facilities, correct? Okay. What is the direct benefit to the city in that case, Ken? Do they generate revenue from that ownership?
No. What they generate is all of the ancillary benefit from the future development, but also they basically have a self-sustaining city asset. It doesn't cost them anything to run the Saddle Dome. We run it. They own it. We run it. Nobody would argue that we aren't good stewards, shepherds, managers of the process, and that type of thing. And that's really what you want, is to have no city assets that are a drain. And you need a lead tenant. You need a strong tenant. In this case, a strong tenant and an operator, and that's us. So people kind of question that whole land thing. Well, they're not giving the land to anybody. They own it now, and they're going to own it forever. That portion, the development land, will likely be sold for money, and tax proceeds, and everything else. So it's not ours and theirs. We're going to put serious money, $450 million, into a public building. And we're going to also occupy it and be good managers of it.
What, you know, beyond just the Flames and the Stampeders and the Hitmen and the Roughnecks, what else can your vision, this vision, bring to Calgary? I mean, concerts clearly, and we miss some. But is there more to it? And this is not a hidden agenda about, you know, an Olympics bid or anything like that. But what does this open up?
Well, it does open up. If anybody was interested in an Olympic bid, it does open that up. I mean, it takes $1 billion off an Olympic bill, Olympic bid bill. That's what it does. So I don't know if we'll ever bid for an Olympics or not. But if we do, we got a massive head start with the execution of this project. Those cultural events shouldn't be overlooked. They cause people to leave the city to go to other cities, to go to concerts and other things like that, as opposed to have other people from other cities coming here. That's a tourism issue. That's a hotel issue. That's a gasoline issue. That's all of the airline issue. That's all of the things that make a tourism and economically driven market work. So that opens that up. The fun one is we've quietly gone about promoting health and wellness in the city. Spent money on it. Continue to spend money on it. This is going to figure prominently in how our foundation will operate, because of the field house, because of everything. I mean, there may be some medical facilities there for the benefit of But really, the real benefit I'd like to do is to take the inspiration and the motivation and the educational ability that our brands have and lend them for no money to the community to promote health and wellness. It's powerful. I mean, really powerful.
All right, my last one for you. What haven't you been asked about this project? You have now presented it and have shown it to the media. You've shown it to the public. The public will now vet it. The community will vet it. But I'm curious about, you know, because you've been in it this from the start. Is there something that has not been asked? Is there something that has not come up that you're a little surprised yet?
No, I will say that moving the narrative off of a hockey rink and taxpayers' money, I think we've successfully done that. I thought that was the wrong question, and because it was the wrong question. Because it's not a hockey rink.
Is that why it's called an event center in the presentation? Is that why you refer to it as an event center?
Yep. I mean, we're going to play hockey there, make no mistake. And that's really important and really valuable. You'll also notice an absence of braggadocio from us relative to the civic pride and the value and the economics of having professional sports franchises here. It's huge and it's powerful. So huge and so powerful that were it not here, this market would be pleading to get it here. As Winnipeg, as Quebec City is doing, and as Winnipeg did do, had it, lost it, got it back. One of the things that I have said and will repeat is that if we were from another place, London, Paris, New York, came here with $450 million and an idea and said, geez, is anybody interested in talking to us? My guess is the mayor, the councillors, Calgary Economic Development, Chamber of Commerce, and anybody with a pulse would say, oh boy, are we ever. You're interested in investing that much money in our city in a place where there's a contaminated issue and everything else, if you flip that around, sometimes they say you can't be a prophet in your own country. If we were from someplace else, I think people would be begging us to do this.